The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Crime Prevention 101 with host Susan Bartlestone. We're so happy you've joined us. Over the next hour, you'll learn the tips, tricks, and vital information that'll help you keep yourself confident and safe. Now, here's the host of Crime Prevention 101, Susan Bartlestone.
Can you imagine how creepy it would be if all of a sudden you notice some stranger following you on the train, on a bus, in the supermarket, lurking outside your home or office, work days, weekends, all times of the day and night, far too much to be coincidence? Or more commonly, how about an ex-husband or boyfriend or girlfriend calling, emailing, texting you hundreds of times a day, threatening you, causing a scene at your job, breaking into your home? These are just a few of the behaviors that are classified as stalking behavior. And stalking is a crime that affected about 1.4 million people in the United States as of June 2009. The stalking victims are mostly women. Stalking can last for years. It's extremely difficult to get law enforcement or judicial solutions to it. And tragically, it's a crime that often turns lethal. Well, since January is National Stalking Awareness Month, I thought we'd talk about stalking on tonight's show. The facts, the myths, and a life-saving tool that's available to family courts that's not being taken advantage of. Orders of protection with a GPS enhancement. You absolutely must hear about this. And I've also got a few suggestions to help you protect yourself if you find yourself in this situation. So be sure to stay tuned for these suggestions. And I've also got a special guest who'll be talking about ways to stay hopeful and optimistic no matter what situation you find yourself in. This is Susan Bartlestone, and you're listening to Crime Prevention 101. Well, 2010 is gone. I'm still getting used to saying 2011, and this is my first new show since the middle of December. And boy, it just feels great to be back in front of the mic again, being with you again, and I'm coming to you from the snow-covered but always hot New York City. And to start off the show in this brand new year, I've got a guest who will make you optimistic and hopeful again, despite all the outer circumstances in your life. Alan Gompers was an extremely successful music promoter, a hotshot real estate developer, salesman, entrepreneur. He made and lost several million-dollar fortunes and betrayed his family and friends in the process. He was arrested for selling drugs and was given 15 years to life in a maximum security prison. But within those walls, he had a spiritual transformation that he says has given him everything he ever wanted. He's the author of Maximum Security, The True Meaning of Freedom, Maximum Security, The True Meaning of Freedom, and now mentors at-risk youth and lectures nationally on meditation and how to find inner contentment. Hey, Alan. Hello and welcome.
Happy New Year, Susan.
Thank you very much. And we tried to do this in December, so I'm glad to say we're doing it now.
Yeah, we finally made it, huh?
All right, Alan, let's start at the beginning. Tell me about your life and how you ended up in jail.
Have you got a few weeks?
Yes.
it all started for me. I remember when I was a little kid, about 12, 13 years old, coming across a picture, a little black and white, of a little boy about 4 or 5 years old, his shoulders bent, his face contorted, and it was the saddest looking, unhappiest looking face I had ever seen, and And as I looked more closely at the picture, I realized that it was a very, very early picture of me.
Mm.
And that the thing that about that picture that really startled me was the look on the face that I had, my face in the picture, projected a feeling that I had with me my entire life. Feelings of loneliness and fear and despair, insecurity, unhappiness. And it was the first moment in my life that I really became aware. It was a moment of awareness where I realized that every single waking moment of my life, this was my experience. Hmm. And it scared me to death.
But you had a very successful life up to a certain point.
Well, at that point in time, I was only 12 years old.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the thing was that I realized how riddled with fear I was. And, you know, maybe your listening audience can relate to this. Fear is an incredibly powerful force. And it can accomplish amazing things. And for me, it actually catapulted me out into the world looking for ways to connect. I felt like I was an alien in a world that I didn't belong in. Trying to find what's that?
I should have felt that way too, sure.
Yeah, maybe a lot of folks did, and I didn't know what to do with it, but I was driven. I mean driven. I was on 24 hours a day. The energy coming out of me was so powerful that everything and anything I got in front of, I turned into a material success, whether it was being in a rock and roll group and making records in the beginning, or meeting girls, or later on getting into the stock market and making fortunes of money, real estate, again, making fortunes of money, boxing, promoting a world-class international champion. I mean, it seemed that every single thing in my life that I touched turned to gold. But these feelings of loneliness and fear inside of me grew no matter how much I got from the world. Everything that I thought was supposed to make me happy, was supposed to end the suffering, did for a moment, and then it would dissolve back into these same insidious feelings again.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, Susan, I turned to drugs.
Mm-hmm. And you were selling drugs also?
Well, after a while, you know, I had this enormous lifestyle that I was living, and I just walked away from it because it was driving me crazy, because it depleted me of all my energy, and my life and my family and my children was something that I loved and I wanted to be with them. So I actually walked away. So I needed to continue the lifestyle, so it was very easy to fall into drugs and then getting to selling them.
And then you got caught.
I came home one night. I actually had a professional fighter in my car. We had just signed for a welterweight championship fight at Madison Square Garden. And the cops were waiting for me. And I remember getting thrown on the hood of the police car, and a voice that was made of stone said to me, "You're in more trouble than you've ever been in your whole life."
Hmm.
And I felt the energy just drain out of me, and about a year later, I was in front of a judge in a courtroom as he sentenced me to 15 years to life.
How long did you actually serve of that, the whole term?
Well, ultimately what happened was, after about 2.5-3 years, I was commuted by the governor of the state of New York.
Wow.
My sentence was dropped. I actually got called into the office of the warden, and he said to me, "Do you have any idea how many inmates there are in the prison system here in New York, men and women?" I said, "I had no idea." He said, "There's over 40,000. At the time, it went up to over 100,000. And he said, "You were one of five that were given this clemency." And
wow.
It was an amazing moment, because it didn't make a difference at that point in time, because I had had an amazing experience out in the prison yard some 2 or 3 years prior to that that had changed my whole life.
And talk about what happened to you.
Well, the thing was, you know, when I first arrived at that maximum security prison, there's 2,000 inmates out there, Susan. And I walk out into the prison yard, and I was just so scared out of my mind. I didn't know what to do. I'd never been in jail before. I didn't know how to even hold my hands, what to say, how to walk, how to talk. And as I made my way out to the yard, I felt this knot of fear in the pit of my stomach, which maybe you folks out in there listening in can relate to, that knot of fear. You know, the butterflies, mm-hmm. the stress, the tension inside. Mm-hmm. It was moving up my chest, and it was filling my whole body. I could feel myself getting hot. My eyes got like coals. I knew I was going to break down. And I made my way to the center of the prison yard. There was a running track, and I took off. The minute I did, my whole being just burst into tears, and I started regurgitating emotions and feelings I didn't even know I had inside of me. And it stopped abruptly after about 20 minutes. I made my way to a corner of the prison yard. I sat down up against the wall, looked out above the wall and onto these amazingly beautiful mountains, and as I saw them there, my eyes just closed, my legs crossed, and I fell into a state of meditation. Now, here's the thing. I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what meditation was. The word itself, I always thought was some weird cult kind of a thing that people did, and I wanted no part of, and there I was in the midst of it. And about 20 minutes later, I opened my eyes again, and I tell you, Susan, the walls were still there. The gun towers were still there. I still had 15 to life. I had learned prior to that my wife of 10 years, we had just renewed our vows, was with another man. She panicked, and I might be spending the rest of my life in prison. And I was sitting on the floor looking out at all of this, feeling happier than I'd ever known in my entire life.
Unbelievable. Now, talk about your life now. What are you doing now?
Well, yeah, I just would like to add one thing to that, and I think this is the key to the message that I'm bringing out to the world, which is, you know, when I got out, people were saying to me, you've got to tell your story because it's amazing. And then they encouraged me to write a book, and it took me 10 years to even wrap myself around that because I'd never written anything in my life, and it took me 10 years and 7 editors to get it to where it was, where I felt really, really right about it. But the thing was, the key to this whole thing was, while I'm sitting on the prison yard's floor looking out at this whole scene, every horror, everything in my life that I ever thought could create suffering and fear was there, facing me in its most insidious forms. And yet, in that moment, when I came out of meditation, none of it had any effect on me.
The book is called Maximum Security, The True Meaning of Freedom, and I know that you are mentoring at Youth Risk and you're lecturing on meditation. How can people find this book and read your story? Give out that website for us.
Well, you know, there are two places that I would recommend people go. Most people, I recommend to go to my website because then we can arrange to have an autographed copy of the book sent out, which is what we've been doing.
Or and that's alangompers.com.
Yep. Right. And it comes right up there, and you can see it for yourself. There's all kinds of interesting other things on the website. It's really well done. My agent and my network marketing people and staff have put together an amazingly beautiful website, and there's all kinds of...
It really is. I've seen it myself. I want everyone to check out alangompers.com. We're coming up on our break, Alan. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. And maybe we'll talk a little bit more about, come back again sometime and see me. We'll talk about, because this is a fearful time. And it was wonderful to have you with me tonight.
Oh, thanks a lot. And we didn't even broach, a quarter of what I would have liked to share.
That's
but it was great
I'm,
to be with you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, you know what? We'll do it again. And this is Crime Prevention 101, the radio show with an optimistic perspective on a sober subject. Coming up, if you're in a stalking or domestic violence situation, or you know someone who is, we're going to talk about what help and resources are available to you.
Yeah. stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain inspired really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Susan Bartlestone, host of Crime Prevention 101. And I want to tell you about My Mobile Witness, a revolutionary service that transforms your camera phone into a personal safety device. My Mobile Witness believes safety is improved when you remove anonymity from dangerous scenarios. If you're in a stalking situation, for example, if you have an order of protection against someone, or if your profession places you in situations that are potentially dangerous, I want you to check out My Mobile Witness. And you parents of college students, ask the school to check out the My Mobile Witness University program with custom-tailored options aimed at keeping both students and faculty safe. Every campus could benefit from the My Mobile Witness University service. For more information, go to mymobilewitness.com.
Get ready to change your life. Achieve your dreams, become a success story, and accomplish so much more. Tune in to Life Radio with Todd Newton. It's your open access to leading authors, experts, and trainers from the world of self-improvement, hosted by one of the world's top certified life coaches and motivational speaker, Todd Newton. Achieve the highest levels of personal development in all areas of your life. Listen to Life Radio with Todd Newton, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Violence, theft, drugs, graffiti, it's all part of joining a gang. In times like these, we need to protect our kids and our community from gangs. Gangs often prey on teens with low self-esteem who perform poorly in school and who seek a sense of belonging. Protect kids from gangs. Know who they're hanging out with. Encourage them to become involved in school activities. Give kids a positive alternative to gangs. To learn more, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Hi, Susan Bartlestone here, and there's plenty of show left, so please start tweeting about us. And don't forget that you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. Come on and join the party. Now, according to the National Stalking Resource Center, 75% of women who were murdered were stalked prior to their murder. And I want to talk about this with Rebecca Drake from the National Stalking Resource Center. And I want to talk about this scary crime that often turns lethal. And Rebecca is the Senior Program Director at the Center. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome.
Hi, Susan. Thanks.
Please just tell us a little bit about yourself briefly and what the National Stalking Resource Center is.
Sure, I'd love to. So I am the Senior Program Associate at the Stalking Resource Center. I've been with the Stalking Resource Center for about 4 years. The Stalking Resource Center, the SRC, is a program of the National Center for Victims of Crime. We started in the year of 2000, and our mission, we sort of have a dual mission, and it's to raise awareness nationally about stalking, and then also to encourage and the development, really, of a multidisciplinary response to the crime of stalking in local communities across our country.
Terrific. And for those that don't know, talk about what stalking is, tell about how extensive it is. What are we talking about here?
Sure. You know, stalking is a crime that is really often quite misunderstood. The simplest way to define stalking is actually that it's a pattern of behavior directed at a specific person that would cause a reasonable person to feel fear. Now, that's sort of in its most simple sort of definition. What I can tell you is that stalking is a crime in all 50 states and in the territories, and is actually a quite is a very prevalent crime. The largest study ever done on stalking in the United States was published in 2009 by the Bureau of Justice Statistics. And what that study showed us is that in a one-year period, over 3 million people were stalked in that one-year period. And so if you wanted to sort of break down that number to really look at how prevalent the crime is in your local community, it sort of breaks down by about 14 per 1,000 in the population. So, for instance, if you lived in a city with a population of 100,000 people, there is about 1,400 cases of stalking annually in that community.
That's even more than I thought. My statistics, I think, were a little out of date. So this, and most of the victims are women, correct?
You know, that women are about three times more likely to be stalked than males. Now, that's not to say that men can't be victims of stalking, because we know that they are, but it is a crime that does affect more women than men.
And I know that the National Stalking Resource Center, you guys were the ones that started Stalking Awareness Month. So tell us what it is and how it came about.
Sure. So Stalking Awareness Month began in 2004, and really we established Stalking Awareness Month in honor of Peggy Klinke. Peggy Klinke was a woman who was murdered by her stalker. And we worked with her family to establish this National Stalking Awareness Month. And really what it is a unifying force for victim service providers, for people in the criminal justice system, the civil justice system, people across the country, to really have an opportunity a month to raise awareness about this crime. So some of the ways that we do that is obviously through training and technical assistance. But we host a website that's stalkingawarenessmonth.org. And on that website, there's a ton of resources to help folks just plan their events in their communities, do outreach. There's a interactive quiz about stalking. People can see how much they know about the crime of stalking. There's a lot of suggestions for how to get involved and raise more awareness about this in their local community.
Now, I remember hearing about that case, Peggy Klinke.
Mm-hmm.
That was the case out in New Mexico. It was her sister that was living in New Mexico.
She was Peggy was in New Mexico for a while, yes, and her stalker was also, and Peggy actually fled to California to try and escape her stalker, and he ultimately found her there, and that's where he assaulted and murdered her. And then himself.
This is a kind of a classic case of stalking. That this woman really did everything possible and was repeatedly ignored by law enforcement. I think this stalking went on for a couple of years. Her stalker had actually set fire. She married someone. The stalker was an ex-boyfriend. And she married someone. He set fire to the house. They fled the state. He tracked them down. It was just a horrible, horrible story. And this is kind of a classic stalking example.
You know, what was really tragic... Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, what was really tragic about Peggy's case and what her stalker was doing is that he, in the beginning, the stalking behavior seemed, sort of on the outside, seemed benign. There were things that he was doing, like leaving gifts, leaving flowers, putting up flyers in the neighborhood about her, doing things that the criminal justice system, for multiple reasons, felt like there wasn't enough there at that time to really be able to intervene. And then his behaviors escalated. And so what happened in that case that is sometimes common with stalking behaviors is that the behaviors escalate, and they sometimes turn into other criminal behaviors. And so things like you mentioned, the arson, there was also vandalism of Peggy's family's house. And so you're right. One thing that I do want to point out, and you brought this up in the beginning, women who are murdered by an intimate partner are oftentimes stalked by that partner in the year prior to their murder. So I don't want to have to, sometimes these statistics get a little bit confused, but I just want to make sure that we have that qualifier in there that it's actually women who are murdered by an intimate partner or a former intimate partner.
Ah, mm-hmm. As opposed to a stranger.
Correct. You know, and that actually, Susan, is something that a lot of people still have a misconception about stalking. People think that, you know, stalking only happens to celebrities, that it only happens to strangers. And really, that's the minority of the cases. The majority of stalking cases involve someone that is known to the victim, and oftentimes is an intimate partner or former intimate partner.
I want to make sure that people do get that point. I had been working with someone in my home state of New York, who was actually stalked by a stranger, which was a little less common, but she ran into the same problems. She didn't actually know who this fellow was. He just selected her for whatever reason. He would turn up on her job and follow her around when she walked out of the house. And people kind of think that that's really what it is, but that tends to be much less prevalent, you know, than someone that you were in a relationship with or that you knew. So, and now, it was very difficult for Peggy Klinke and for this woman to get help from law enforcement, and yet all 50 states, as you said, have laws against it. Why is it so hard to stop these people?
Well, you know, that's actually an excellent question, and that's one of the things that that we work so hard on is educating all people in the criminal justice system and also the civil justice system. We work very closely and provide a significant amount of training for criminal justice professionals. There's a lot of reasons, I think, several reasons, really, why it's difficult to have people really understand this crime and then also be able to intervene. Oftentimes, stalking at first is not really seen as a crime. It's thought of as just these annoying behaviors, these things that if a person were to just ignore it, it would go away. What we know is actually stalkers are quite persistent. And another thing that's very common in stalking cases is that there are oftentimes behaviors that by themselves are not criminal. So, for example, it's not illegal to call someone 10 times, 20 times, 30 times. It's not illegal to drive by someone's house. It's really when it's put together as this course of conduct directed at somebody or this pattern of behavior that's directed at that person and it's causing them fear, that's when you have the crime of stalking. But recognizing that and sort of having us think about this crime takes a little bit of a different analysis. It takes us putting these pieces of the puzzle together to see this full picture that these behaviors like phone calling, text messaging, you know, using the computers, posting on social networking sites, and then also things that are crimes in and of themselves, things like vandalism, that those behaviors, when put together as that course of conduct, make the crime of stalking.
That's really important to make sure that you can present to the law enforcement this pattern. Now, you've got a lot of resources on the website. Give out the website so people can check it out.
Sure. Our main website is hosted by the National Center for Victims of Crime, so it's www.ncvc.org/src. In honor of National Stalking Awareness Month, this one's real easy to remember, it's stalkingawarenessmonth.org, and that will also link you back to our main website.
Terrific. Well, Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me, and I just wanted to tell you, and I don't know if you have any influence, but Crime Prevention 101 was nominated for an award by the National Victims of Crime organization, and gosh, I hope I was just so thrilled that we were nominated.
Well, it's truly been my honor to speak with you, Susan, so thank you so much.
Yes, and make sure stalkingawareness.org. Okay, when we come back, a tool that could be saving the lives of countless stalking and domestic violence victims, but it's only being used in about 10% of the cases that it could be. Stay tuned.
Talk.
That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
You're walking alone. A group of people is hanging out just ahead. Suddenly, they surround you.
Hey, yo, where you going? Come here.
Before you know it, you're being robbed. It's called a pack robbery, a robbery involving a group of assailants, and it can be violent. In times like these, trust your instincts. Don't become their next victim. Avoid suspicious groups. Avoid desolate or poorly lighted areas. Be aware of your surroundings. To learn more about pack robberies, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Yes, this is Crime Prevention 101. This is Susan Bartlestone. Welcome back. And be sure to stick around because at the end of the show, I've got some suggestions for you if you're in a stalking situation or you know someone who is. Now let's meet Bonnie Russell, who is the founder and director of Family Law Courts, and talk about stalking and GPS devices. Now, Bonnie is a longtime PR veteran, assisting professionals with media needs, including individuals who are hoping to bring greater public awareness to issues involving family court, which is the largest and most used court system in the nation. In 2001, Bonnie created familylawcourts.com as a kind of a cheat sheet for the media to use when gathering facts about family court and cases. And in the process, began whistleblowing on such issues as fake therapists and attorneys that were working in the courts, and costing San Diego taxpayers, which is where she is, hundreds of thousands of dollars. She's got a lot to say. She says it loudly, and not everyone wants to hear it. Hi, Bonnie. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks.
Just talk a little bit about Family Law Courts, your organization, what it is and what you do. And then I want to talk about GPS and stalking.
Basically, I founded familylawcourts.com when I realized the con of family court. Once someone goes and files an action for divorce, they have just invited the state to micromanage their life for however long their children are. And so they're sort of caught in the system. And the business of government is business. So it's more about not resolution, but judges often act like sales reps for those who work in the child custody industry, in the divorce and child custody industry. So basically they chew them up, spit them out, and it's on to the next one. And I just decided, I had no idea at the time that I would start almost immediately tripping over fake attorneys, fake therapists, and real judges who knew but didn't seem to care. But that is exactly what happened. And over the past 10 years, I've also talked about post-traumatic stress disorder in the courts, parental alienation, a variety of things. But what I noticed was mainly the police are not providing the public services for which the public is paying taxes for. And if you call the police whenever there's a crime, an inter-family crime, they blow you off and say, well, just get a restraining order in family court. That's why they call it domestic violence instead of what it is. It's assault, it's attempted murder, it's battery, it's murder. There's no such thing as domestic violence. That's a cocktail party phrase used to fundraise. So,
very good point.
As the evidence of what's happened lately with words, we have to examine the words that we use. And so once I realized that we are not getting our tax dollars, I thought, oh, my goodness. And sure enough, if you look at the supervised visitation section of the site, it lists, it decriminalizes crimes. Parental abduction, that's kidnapping, sexual molesting. That's
now,
a lot of things.
You're based in San Diego, but you do gather figures from nationwide, correct?
Oh, yes, and my clients are nationwide, too. People call and ask me to, you know, help get them some media coverage, and I try to either impact the case through my research or, failing that, go through media. My best result happened to be with a mother who was demonized for taking her, asking the court to address the fact that she thought that the father was a pedophile. After the coverage, he changed his plea from not guilty to guilty. And there was a lot of evidence, but the family court had allowed him to get away with it. Everybody was on the father's side, the therapist, the guardian ad litem, the whole kit and caboodle. The mother was demonized. He's now serving time, and the child is back with the mother. But
well, I love this idea of using the media to shine a light on some of these things, and that's what Stalking Awareness Month is trying to do. Well, now, you've done a lot of research in terms of orders of protection with a GPS enhancement. And
yes.
Just for people who don't know exactly what an order of protection is, just talk about that briefly. Then let's talk about what it is with the GPS enhancement.
Yes. An order of protection, if English is not your first language and you don't know, you might think that an order of protection might protect you, or a restraining order might restrain someone from harming you. And in fact, that is not true, as most people know. But what is true is that now technology has advanced to the point where these orders could be effective. And how it works, how it would work if the judges would be willing to use the technology, is that you could get a GPS device in family court as an enhancement to an existing restraining order. You can't just run in and get a restraining order. How it works both for men and women is I have found that men are secretly having themselves GPSed in order to combat false allegations of stalking, which I think is wonderful. I can't stand it when people lie to get the orders they want.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too, but let me just back up a little bit. I want to clarify this for everybody. If you're in a stalking situation, one of the few weapons that you might have is to go to court and get an order of protection or a restraining order from the judge. And what that basically does, it'll set down different terms. This stalker or this abuser cannot come within 500 yards of you, cannot come to your home, you know, whatever conditions they're going to set. And these have proven woefully ineffective. They will not stop a bullet. And the only thing that it does is says if this person violates this order, then the police can pick them up. Well, that can be too late.
Now, oh, not only that, in San Diego, they have said, well, you might not want to apply for one because sometimes that might trigger an attack. It's like, well, why don't you announce that you're giving up?
Right.
So, I find it outrageous. However, there is a solution.
That's true. But so what we need to do is not abandon order protections. We need to strengthen it, which is, now, a GPS tracking device is something that is put onto...
No. I have to stop you. There's a difference between a tracking and monitoring, and that's where the problem begins. What you want is GPS monitoring. A tracker does not mean eyeballs are on it. A tracker just means that information is going from a satellite to point B, at which point some person would key into point B. They'd log in to see point B. Monitoring is human eyeballs on real-time situations where they could see where a person is. And what happens is they watch screens, and if somebody starts to violate it, a pop-up will come up on the screen, and that person will the person with eyeballs on might contact them and say, why are you on this screen? Why are you getting close to violating this area? Or if there's an alarm saying the battery has gone down, they will contact the individual saying, you must get, it's a violation of the order if you let your battery go down. If someone tampers with it, they're on the phone again. But in this time, GPS monitoring with victim notification, they also call the person ahead of time and say, in real time, saying, look, this person's getting close to you, I suggest you leave the area. Or they could be at home and say you got protection orders or restraining orders from both the workplace and the home. You could be at work, you'd get a call and saying, don't go home right now. The person is 30 yards from your front door. So you need to,
I love it. So you can work. Now, how many courts, do you have any idea?
They're being used in criminal court. I mean, it's talk about letting, closing the corral door after the horse has gone out. They're being used effectively in criminal court, but where they need to happen is because we need to realize that family court judges are simply adjudicating criminal acts, and they're calling them abuse instead of battery or something like that, because A, the police aren't taking the report, B, the district attorney isn't filing, and C, the victim often winds up dead. So this would eliminate it. You get for judges to use a GPS monitoring enhancement to their restraining orders would both save lives and the state money. Where are you going to get the money? The state already has it. That's the beauty of it. When you consider the cost, say for a year of this, equals about 2 days worth of a murder investigation. That's not the time that the state pays or the county pays for the jail time. It's not the time that is spent preparing for trial for the defender and for the prosecutor. It's not the prison time afterwards. I mean, the first judge to do this is going to retire. It'll read on their obituary page that they were the one that brought innovation to the family courts.
Can this be asked for in every state? I mean, do they all have access
certainly.
To it?
Attorneys, that is another problem. I personally called the sports commentator Aaron Andrews was being stalked and Uma Thurman were being stalked by the schizophrenic. I called their attorneys and I said, that's not news. That's what stalkers do. They stalk.
Mm-hmm.
I said to one reporter, the news is I've contacted both their attorneys. They didn't so much as return phone calls. So I've got to ask myself, well, does this come down to billable hours or what? Why are they not zealously advocating to get these into court and get the
before
the judge?
Why indeed? All right. Well, we just broke the scoop here, and let's see. We're shining a light on it. All right. I can't believe it, Bonnie. We've run out of time. I wanted to talk about that. You can use it to prove you did not stalk somebody. Let's just mention that. Give out your website so people can get more information.
It's familylawcourts.com.
Familylawcourts.com. There's so many issues that you touch on. We're going to have to talk again. Okay.
Okay, Susan.
All right. Pleasure, Bonnie. Very
you too.
Important information. Make sure you check it out, familylawcourts.com. Well, this is Crime Prevention 101. Stay right where you are. When we come back, I've got some suggestions for you if you're in a stalking situation and you need to protect yourself. Stay tuned.
Talk.
That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Susan Bartlestone, host of Crime Prevention 101. And I want to tell you about My Mobile Witness, a revolutionary service that transforms your camera phone into a personal safety device. My Mobile Witness believes safety is improved when you remove anonymity from dangerous scenarios. If you're in a stalking situation, for example, if you have an order of protection against someone, or if your profession places you in situations that are potentially dangerous, I want you to check out My Mobile Witness. And you parents of college students, ask the school to check out the My Mobile Witness University program with custom-tailored options aimed at keeping both students and faculty safe. Every campus could benefit from the My Mobile Witness University service. For more information, go to mymobilewitness.com.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions at fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions at fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Hello again. This is Susan Bartlestone. Don't forget that Crime Prevention 101 is available on iTunes. So you don't even have to be at your computer to listen to all this wonderfulness. And I also wanted to tell you that I'll be posting links to all my guests, along with more information about show topics, on my blog, crimeprevention101.com. Now I want to give you a couple of tips. If you're in a stalking situation, and or you know someone that is, and you know, the unfortunate thing is that even though it's not fair, you know, and this is extremely unfair, you're going to be the one that's going to have to change your normal day-to-day routines and your way of life, and sometimes pretty radically. But there's no getting around it. Changes are critical in order to ensure your safety. And I'm also sorry to say this, but there's no single course of action that I can promise you will end harassment or stalking. In a certain way, you're going to have to just ride it out. But knowing your options will help empower you. And I hope the following tips have proved effective in most situations or many situations over time. Now, obviously, there is no absolutes in a crime situation, in a stalking situation. You know, I can only tell you what appears to have the best track record. And first and foremost, we always tell people that you have no contact with the stalker. Stalkers, by and large, most of them feed on your attention and that of anyone close to you. And it doesn't matter whether that attention is positive or negative. They don't care. As long as they get attention from you, that's what they're looking for. If they have to call you 100 times for you to pick up that phone, and on the 101st time you pick it up, they know that the next time they have to call you 101 times. That's the way they are. Also, don't contact or confront the stalker, and don't send a large friend or relative. Only the police should confront the stalker on your behalf. It's really dangerous to have other people do it. It's really important to document every call or message that the stalker sends to you in a journal or folders or whatever.
and photograph with your camera phone any face-to-face contact the stalker has with you. You're going to need this to show the police. Now, that Peggy Klinke case that we were talking about earlier, she had, I think it was like 500 pages of documentation. So I can't tell you that it's all going to be worth it, but you've got to have it if you're going to go to the police. And they are better. They are getting better now than they were even a year ago. If you get packages or letters from the stalker, return them unopened. Don't respond to emails or texts. This next one's very important. Tell your family, friends, neighbors, landlord, you know, apartment complex manager, employers, coworkers, that you're being stalked so they don't inadvertently give out your contact information. When Peggy Klinke moved from Albuquerque to California, the stalker tracked her there and found her by pretending to be a friend, and her landlord or one of her neighbors told her what apartment she was in. So it's horrible and it's embarrassing, but you want to make sure that they don't give away information you don't want that stalker to have. Show your important contacts there, your neighbors and everything, a picture of the stalker, because many times stalkers will impersonate repairmen or deliverymen and or even law enforcement personnel to gain access to their victim or their victim's premises. So let's talk about changing your phone number. A lot of people will do that. Many stalkers do become enraged if their victims change their phone number, and also if their this idea of don't have any contact with them can get them enraged. So understand that. This can prompt the stalker to come to the victim's home or office in any desperate attempt to make contact. It's even possible that it'll get them madder. A couple of things that are suggested that have worked: get a second phone line with an unlisted number, which you're going to give out carefully, and keep an answering machine on your old number to pick up the stalker's calls, but don't answer that phone. And turn off the ringer on that old phone so that you're not bothered in the middle of the night, because that's another thing that stalkers commonly do. You don't want to tip the stalker off that the number has been changed for as long as possible. Plus, that answering machine is going to give you a good record of the harassment in case you decide to prosecute. Keep a cell phone handy in case the stalker cuts your phone line. The next one is, I think, really important, and it's get advice from a stalking counselor or agency before you decide whether to get an order of protection or injunction against the stalker. And again, you know, there are many pros and some serious cons involved in this. Each stalking case and stalker is going to be unique, and you need to know all your options before you make a final decision whether to file for one. I think the idea of that GPS monitoring enhancements is an excellent one. It's a life-saving one. My guest, Bonnie Russell, said that every state can offer it, so you need to be aware of it, and you need to put pressure on, if you go for an order of protection or a restraining order, that you want this enhancement. And if the police are not taking your complaint seriously, go to an organization like NOW or like Family Law Courts, which will get publicity for you. We had a case in New York recently, slightly different but the same theme, where a judge had had given a rapist like 6 months probation for some reason, and I don't remember all the details of the case, but I do know there was a tremendous outcry, and in fact the National Organization for Women, NOW, was in the forefront, and a couple of organizations I work with sponsored them, and they held rallies. They got behind this woman's case, and the judge reviewed the decision and gave that person jail time. So, yes, it's really hard to get the police to take stalking seriously, but if you've got good documentation, you can get help from the community, and don't rule it out. You're not alone, and the court's not necessarily the only answer. Well, you know what? That's a wrap for now. Please don't forget, we always love to hear from you. So by all means, post your comments and suggestions on my blog, crimeprevention101.com. Tell your friends about us. The show is available as a podcast after it airs. You can send it out to them. Let them know about it if you know someone that's in a situation like this. And you and I will be doing this again next week, same time, same place. It'd be a crime not to listen. So stay tuned and stay safe.
We hope you got some useful information and inspiration this week on Crime Prevention 101. Susan Bartlestone invites you to join us again next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Voice America. If you want to learn more about Susan's guests, sign up for her newsletter, or find out about upcoming teleseminars and workshops, go to www.crimeprevention101.com today. Have a great week and a safe week.